Today, a message for you from the bond market. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. I'm joined by Steve Van Meter. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Martin. Great to be back.
Really great to have you back on the show. We've been catching up, intermittently, but last few months less so because it's just been crazy. But look, it's really important to try and get a bit of a more sensible read of it, what's going on, right? And I guess the first point is the bonds. Well, they're saying rates are going down later. The 10-year is lower than the 2-year inversion. Is that a critical signal?
Yeah, it really is. And we're seeing that the 2s 10s, as you mentioned, the what's considered the yield curve here in the U.S. Is inverted, which is unusual. A lot of people would look at that and say, what, the 10-year is lower than 2-year? How can that be? It doesn't make any sense. It's not just the 2 10s are inverted. You have the front end of the curve. Forward bills are inverted against the reverse repo rate. You've got the euro dollar futures curve that is more inverted now than it was in 2007 going into the great financial crisis. And what you have is the bond market screaming as loud as it can that the Federal Reserve and other policy and other central banks are making a massive mistake here, and that interest rates in the global economy are going to come crashing down.
And it is weird, isn't it? Because the bond market is really clear. I mean, it's so clear on this. And yet, central banks around the world, including the Fed and down here in Australia, the RBA, they just keep turning that dial higher and higher and higher to try and crush inflation, which was created by supply chain disruption and their own quantitative easing programs in the first place.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. If you look at what they're trying to do is trying to crush what really is supply chain inflation. As you mentioned, they did all this easing. And not only that, but you have the factor of the direct to consumer stimulus that happened all around the world. It just led to massive amounts of inflation. And now there's this notion that somehow monetary policy is going to get more oil out of the ground, get more ships to move across the ocean. It doesn't work that way. But if you're trying to crush demand, well, there's a great way to do it. It's cause a recession. But the challenge that I see right now, Martin, is, you know, there used to be at times where certain parts of the world were at different stages in their economic cycle. When you had the COVID lockdowns, we effectively reset the global economy near the closest level to each other that we ever have. And so we all went into this massive pandemic together. We came out of it now varying stages, but again, very close together. And now everybody's tightening, as you said. And the idea is somehow we're going to escape this with just maybe a mild recession. I don't think that's how it's going to play out.
Well, it is interesting because some of the, you know, the global players like the IMF and even the OECD are talking about much more significant downturns and significant risks of recession. Of course, the Andrew Bailey in the UK last week, the Bank of England guy, basically bailed the cat, didn't they? You know, 13% to inflation, a recession for at least a year, it's coming and there's nothing anybody can do about it.
No, but a lot of people are in denial about it. But the reality is either we accept the fact that we're going to have high inflation and that maybe in itself it will ultimately be transitory as it will restrict demand on its own, or central bankers are going to tighten things so fast that it's going to cause a recession. The worst thing, which I think is definitely in the cards, is we get another financial crisis because, you know, these get born when asset prices get inflated, which happened, and then people start borrowing against them. And it could, you know, it doesn't mean necessarily they borrowed against their home, but it could be they're borrowing, you know, buying homes at the top of the market, buying stocks on margin top of the market, borrowing against their businesses or cars. And all of a sudden, asset prices come down. People start losing their jobs. They can't afford to make the payments. And next thing you know, all of a sudden, delinquencies turn to defaults and defaults turn into a crisis.
Right. And let's talk liquidity for a second, right? Because I think that's something else we should be talking about. Remember that the Fed is draining liquidity from the financial system, its quantitative tightening programs. We're seeing that certainly down here in Australia, the bond liquidity is a really big issue. You know, there's a lot of volatility in the bond sector here, but liquidity is way down. And of course, as they pull more out, that liquidity trap is really going to be quite severe.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting. You hear all these people that were talking about, you know, how quantitative easing was inflationary, causing expansion of the money supply. And you go to invention and say, well, wait a minute, all right, that's fair. If that's your belief, then quantitative tightening does actually slow the growth of the money supply down. And I was looking at the US M2 money supply just the other day, and it's decelerated rapidly. In fact, it's already starting to contract. So if you believe and hold that to be true, and the Fed continues that, even if they were to pause in September, I don't think that's in the case. I think September is their last hike, but they're committed to doing this quantitative tightening, and it increases to $95 billion in September. Well, what that tells you is they're driving the year-over-year rate of change of money supply negative at a time when you have massive amounts of debt here in the U.S., and not just the U.S., but you know, with policymakers around the world doing it, they're tightening things up at a time you have record debt levels. And boy, that just is not going to play out the way they think.
And it's also worth recognizing that, you know, there's a lot of corporate debt around the place, which was very cheap. That's being replaced by more expensive money as they roll and as rates go up. Certainly mortgage refinancing here in Australia, people were on around 2% mortgages. They're looking now at a 4 to 5% mortgage hike. I mean, those are not small moves. Those are massive moves. And that is why we're seeing huge pressure and why household confidence is significantly down on where it was. And yet, amid all of this, the stock markets have, you know, dropped back and now they're coming up. And I think they're just sort of reacting sugar hit wise to some of the more recent results, which weren't too bad. But that was back then. That doesn't relate to what's now and what's ahead, does it?
No, not at all. In fact, this is more of a typical bear market rally where people think the worst is behind them. And for some reason, and Martin, I don't get this because the data is very clear. Even if the Fed were to pause in September, again, that's not my base case. I think they've got enough data between now and then that will give them cause to at least do a quarter basis point hike, if not more. But there's this idea that, oh, if the Fed just pauses at some point, or if they just back off, maybe September's it, that means the stock market's going to rally. That actually isn't how it works historically. If you look back at history, you can see where there are times the Fed pauses where the market could go higher, but most of the time it means the market's headed lower, and then all of a sudden, next thing you know, you see the economy start to recess. You see the stock market fall and the Fed react. And you look at this from a profit standpoint, from an earnings standpoint, you have these massive inventory levels. And here in the U.S., it's getting worse because, you know, we're just starting to see that China's coming back online a little bit and more ships are coming over here. And companies, NVIDIA reported the other day that they're having, you know, inventory issues, and they locked in inventory purchases at these really high prices. Well, they're not the only ones. You have Walmart, Target, all these retailers. And all of a sudden, what's going to happen is they're going to be forced to discount. They're going to end up laying people off. And all of a sudden, you've got this confluence of monetary policy hitting at the same time. And even if the Fed were to pause, it doesn't mean stocks keep going up. But what it means right now is people believe it and they're putting money into it. But what we've seen throughout history is they're just torching their money and they don't realize it.
Yeah, and it's very interesting because if you look carefully, some of the more seasoned stock market investors are still in cash and holding on the sidelines, right? What we're finding is that quite a few people who are coming back into the market thinking it's all over and we've hit the bottom are the less experienced, you know, those Robin Hood type investors, the mum and dad investors. I think they're really going to get a horrible shock.
Yeah, there absolutely are. And you're seeing some of the bigger professionals are looking at the bond market. Of course, as you mentioned, and we started the show with, the yield curve tells us what's coming. It doesn't tell us the timing event. So it doesn't say, hey, the curve inverts and you've got 2 months. You could have a year and a half. And that's what people are hoping, is that there's still this, you know, big rally. Because if you look at retail investors, they always buy at the top. And sure enough, the data supported that they did most of their buying near the top. And as the market came down, well, you know, they end up being like a gambler where in order to get back to even, they keep putting more money. So you're at the table, you're upside down, you know, playing blackjack a little bit, you breach in your pocket, and you're doubling your bets, hoping that you get some winning hands and some momentum behind it, and you can recover your losses. That's what you're seeing here. Whereas some of the bigger players, the deeper hands, are starting to look at the bond market and say, hey, wait a second, I remember these inverted yield curves lead to lower interest rates and higher bond prices. I think I'll take my money and go there.
Now, let's just talk about definitions of recession, right? Because, you know, the US did report two negative quarters. But of course, everybody politically speaking is saying, well, that's not a recession. You know, this will be a recession if we ever declare it later. But again, it's quite a weird scenario that we're in, isn't it?
It is. I mean, technically, we did meet the qualifications for a recession, two declining quarters. Now, I mean, it wasn't in terms of a decline, it wasn't severe. And we know here the organization that reports an official recession usually often does it after the recession is over. So the idea that they're going to run out and be like, oh, wow, we have two quarters of declining GDP, it got to be a recession, because those things still get revised. I mean, there's still time to revise some of these numbers. So maybe we didn't have one. I mean, we'll find out. But we're seeing a lot of indications that we're headed there. Unemployment claims are starting, you know, to rise, not rapidly, but they're trending higher. You know, of course, the Fed's tightening, that's always a play. So you're seeing these number of factors. And again, we talked about inventory building. It, just in general, the economy has to come down from these highs, but no one really buys that we can actually are going to slow down enough to head into recession. But yet here in the U.S., inflation-adjusted wages are negative. I mean, they're still negative, so people can't afford all of this stuff. And that when that happens, well, the probabilities that we're heading into recession, at least we start looking at, you know, the yield curve and euro dollars future curve. The yield curve is 85% accurate, the euro dollars futures curve so far is 100% accuracy when inverted. I mean, tell us we're headed there. Maybe these buyers of equities get, you know, last hurrah the next couple of months. I have a hunch that it's just not going to play out that way, as you said.
Well, I always have this suspicion of September, October, because if you look back in history, right, September and October tend to be the months when the markets go a bit for wobbly. So, you know, bear market, bit of a rally, then go down again and then probably down further is what I'm seeing at the moment based on everything I'm looking at. But what's also interesting, of course, the participation rate in the U.S., is still way lower than pre-COVID, isn't it? So there's a lot of people who are not working.
Yeah, and that was kind of what the Fed was hoping for, and it makes a lot of sense. The participation rate is a number of people, or percentage of working age people that are participating in the workforce. Now, it doesn't mean you have to have a job. If you're just out looking for a job, you're counted. And the idea was that, hey, as wages go up, those who are on the sofa will say, hey, well, I'd like to go back to work and do that, take advantage of those higher wages. In fact, we're seeing the participation rate start to slow down, which is telling us that the issues with the economy are much structural, much different. They're structural. There's something else that's wrong. It's not just higher wages that are causing this problem. But one thing that will change, and Martin, you're going to laugh. I know you're going to laugh when I say this. You bring the markets down, right? There's still people that believe the markets are going to go back up, but you bring the markets down, you bring like crypto prices down, housing prices down, it will bring people back into the workforce, because there's people that have left the workforce to become traders or to retire. You know, you see this in housing bubbles. People, you know, go and become self-employed and get a work tied to the housing industry. You see the crypto market. People quit their jobs to trade crypto or start a crypto business. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, as the asset prices come down, as those opportunities go away, well, they still have bills to pay. And so that brings them back into the workforce. We're not there yet, but I have a hunch that that's coming.
Exactly right, which again is counterintuitive in a way, but it's just the way the markets and the economy works, isn't it? And I guess the other point here is that the US dollar is way high at the moment, right? It's 106, which is, you know, pretty much top of the level. Now, that's putting a lot of pressure on other economies around the world. I almost think that that's a deliberate strategy from the Fed to try and keep, you know, the US dollar really strong.
Well, if the Fed wishes they could control the dollar, and they can't. And what we're seeing with the dollar rising, I mean, the common explanation is, well, they're tightening monetary policy, so it has to be it. Really, what we're seeing is a structural shortage of dollars in the global economy. And that starts to make sense, because if the global economy is greased, you know, the wheels are greased by the flow of dollars, well, if there's a shortage of dollars, then the value of the dollar goes up. And that tends to be what we see going into recessions and financial crises. You start to see first the dollar head up and attempts to ease it, which there haven't been any, at least from the Federal Reserve at this time, but there's belief that this should go down from a lot of market participants, that it just stubbornly doesn't go down. Or if it does, it's not very much, and then it continues higher. That's going to be the catalyst of this crisis, is the the dollar is going to shoot higher. I think it's headed to 120, and then from there, even higher. Interest rates will then have to go down. There is a relationship with the dollar and interest rates, and you know, people don't really get that. But if you think about it, if I'm short something, right? Let's say I'm short gasoline. Well, where would I go? I'd go to the gas station, and if the gas station was short, where would they go? To the refiner. If they're short, well, they would go to the, you know, oil producers or getting oil out of the ground. And you start to go back to where things are born. Well, where do new dollars enter the economy from? Well, they enter from the commercial banking system and the euro dollar banking system when people borrow money. And while people are borrowing more money as rates are higher, they're not borrowing it in the way you want. You're seeing credit cards. You're not seeing big dollar loans. Well, if you want big dollar loans, you need rates to fall. And that's why the global economy, the monetary system will force rates and shrink them down until they react. And that's why you see the dollar rising going into financial crisis. And then you see yields outright collapse. That's what's to come.
And let's just go slightly further on the euro dollar, right? Because it's worth, I think, understanding that particular market. In other words, it's dollars outside the formal control, right? It's a huge market. And it really does set the tone for quite a lot of other things that go on, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's where we look at the Eurodollar's futures curve. And what we see is it's inverted. And that's telling us, you know, that there is a shortage of dollars out there, that hedgers are concerned that there is a financial crisis. And we're talking big money players. I mean, we're talking some of the biggest, deepest pockets in the global financial system are saying, look, we're not confident about what is coming, and we're going to actually start hedging in a big way. That's why you see 4-week bill rates here in the US below the overnight reverse repo rate. And you say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, it does. If you have a collateral shortage, you will pay any price for collateral, even though you can go to the Fed and get a higher rate. You can't get collateral from them. So what you're seeing is the biggest players in the global economy are saying, we think something bad is going to happen. We're not sure, but we're going to go insure against it just in case. And notably, these people rarely ever wrong.
That's worth noting, isn't it? And we should just touch on gold, because there were people a few months ago saying, well, gold is a hedge against inflation, right? So, well, we've got high inflation. So hang on a moment. What's gold doing?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and if the problem with gold is it didn't really act as an inflation hedge. And if it's headed lower, then it's suggesting that inflation is going down, although people remain very bullish on gold. And now they'll switch their tune to, well, it's a hedge against a financial crisis. The reality in what you tend to see, at least from the financial crisis, the behavior of gold is real simple. It's starting an uptrend, and then what will happen is there's a crisis and people sell what they have to get what they need. So if I need dollars to pay my mortgage and make my car payment, feed my kids, and I have to sell things, well, I could go, let's say I lose my job. I could go to my 401k, but what do I have a problem with? Well, if I'm not old enough, I have a 10% penalty, even at, if I lost my job, I still have to pay income taxes on it. But things like gold, things like crypto, things that are, that you can buy with after-tax money, those are the first things you sell. Because you think about it, it's like, why don't you sell your car? Well, at some point, I have to go get another job. So I can't get rid of all my cars. I don't want to be homeless again. That happened in a financial crisis for a lot of people. So, you don't want to go through these things again, and you sell what you have, gold, crypto, to get what you need. And usually what happens after that is then it takes off after it's dropped. And I expect that will happen this time. But in the immediate turn, it looks like gold is headed lower along with other precious metals. But that would make sense because the dollar's headed higher is telling you people are prioritizing dollars over all these other things.
Absolutely. The king dollar for the moment continues and probably will for some time. And it's also worth noting, of course, the next CPI read is out, tomorrow, the next session. And quite a few people are saying, well, it'll be lower than the last one, which was 9.1. But hang on, 8.7 versus 9.1, wherever it is, it's still way over the read, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we may have seen peak CPI. And if not, we've got to be really close to it. It has a strong correlation to crude oil prices, and crude oil prices, while they still remain elevated on a year-over-year rate of change, they've headed lower. So it could be that there's other things that are going to keep the CPI up. At tomorrow's print, maybe it comes down, but it's certainly not going to come down enough to give the Fed cause to pause. And that's probably the real issue here. You know, a lot of people are looking at central bankers, particularly the Fed, saying, well, what is it going to cause to get them to stop? Well, you got to think about it. The Fed's target is 2% a year. And as you said, Martin, we're at 9.1. Now, to bring 9.1 down to 2, that's a big, big drop. So it's not going to move that fast right away. And so even if it comes down to, you know, 8.8 or 8.9, and then maybe, you know, 8.5 by the following month for the September FOMC meeting, it's still too high. And that's the Fed's primary focus right now, is they know the cost of living is too high. It's a political issue. And so they're going to keep going until it comes down. The problem is, when it comes down, then they're going to wish it didn't, because it's going to probably go negative.
Exactly. And it just shows you how precarious things are at the moment. But you touched on the political angle. That's worth just thinking about that, right? Because later in the year, there are midterms. I guess that one of the questions which I often think about is, to what extent is the Fed political rather than economic in terms of what it's doing? Do you think there's a political element to it too?
I'm not sure specifically how political the Fed is, although they'll say they're not, but of course, to some degree, of course, they are. What we can say is, there was a meeting with President Biden and Fed Chair Powell, and following that meeting, he seemed to get pretty hawkish. Now, you think about going back throughout history, and it doesn't matter, you know, what party is in power, when you have periods of high inflation where wages are not keeping pace with it, you know, consumers at first, you know, they take it on the chin. They're not happy about it. They complain a little bit. But the longer it persists, the bigger problem it becomes. And they keep hearing from policymakers, oh, it's going to go away, or you're going to get, you know, bigger wage increase. And it doesn't happen. Well, at a certain point, you don't have someone, you don't know who to point fingers at. You point at the party in power, and they get voted out. And that's the big issue here, because if that happens again and Democrats lose a majority, then that means President Biden's now effectively a lame duck president the next 2 years. He's not going to get anything done. So there's a motivation. There is a political aspect to this, that, hey, if he can get the Fed to lower inflation, which President Biden could do by going to his own party and saying, stop spending so much, you know, let's cut spending down, let's do what we can. But they can't, of course. We know that that's not in any politician's playbook, is to cut spending. So they put this all in the back of the Fed. So hopefully the Fed can get it done in time so they can claim a victory. But it's not a victory they actually want. They don't know that. They think they do. But when inflation comes down, it's going to come down with higher unemployment. Those two are actually move fairly consistently together. You want to bring down inflation? Put people on the unemployment line. And that's not what you want going to midterms either.
Absolutely right. Well, you know, we've highlighted what the bond market is telling, what some of those other leading indicators are. It's also worth listening to some of the bankers too, because some of the banks have been quite vociferous about the risks ahead too, haven't they? You know, these are not actually that well reported, but it seems to me quite important as well.
Yeah, we're starting to see the banks react a little bit by raising their loan loss reserves, but they're pretty still early in this phase now. We will see by the next third quarter earnings, there's going to be a big change in the bank's tune. And simple, because if you understand how the banks make money, they borrow at the short end and they lend at the long end. So when those are inverted, so if you're borrowing at one rate and you're lending it out at a lower rate, now that doesn't make sense because you're losing money, well, you stop lending. And that's what we should start to see here at some point, is a yield curve is going to put a big throttle on bank lending. And of course, again, we come back to where our new dollars come from. Well, they come from the commercial banking system. Well, if they're not doing that much lending, that means not as many new dollars are created. By the next quarter's earnings, you're going to hear the banks, you know, they're not going to look that good. But that's what we should expect to see based on what the bond market's doing right now.
Absolutely. And what we're certainly seeing here in Australia, the banks are fighting over themselves to try and actually refinance people and, you know, try and keep the momentum. But their margins are getting crimped. And why? Because their funding costs are going up. And by the way, they've also had massive cheap funding from the RBA, which they've got to repay over the next year or so. So they're really caught now in a pincer movement with these higher rates, and margins are being compressed at the very same time as distress in the mortgage lending pool is beginning to show. Very early days, but we'll see. So again, I think we've got to think that the banks are going to be in real difficulty over the next year or two. Almost wherever you look, you can see these sort of indicators, but not many people are putting them all together. But one of the things I like about what you do, Steve, is you've actually got this picture that puts all the pieces together. And when you put them together, it's not looking positive, it's looking negative. We expect, I think, markets to come back further. And, a significant contraction is ahead. Have you got any thought as to how long this is going to take and how bad it's going to be?
Yeah, that is a good question. I think it's going to be longer than most people expect. I think it's going to be longer than the news and the pundits and all these other experts, because we have these ridiculously large inventory builds here in the U.S. Now, I don't know if that's going on in other parts of the world, but it's still building. And you really have to work through all of that. And if people have less money and they're worried now about their inflated asset prices, because here in America, and of course around the world, people were buying homes, during the pandemic at these overinflated prices. They were buying stocks at overinflated prices. Of course, they're going to end up selling those stocks because they'll need dollars. That happens every time. So my concern is, the idea is that we're going to see these policymakers come back and do something. But the notion that fiscal stimulus is coming back, which is what people are betting on. Oh, don't worry. They're going to run to the rescue. Even if the Fed cuts to zero, it'd be the third time they're at zero. There's a point where the same level of monetary policy doesn't work. And I think we keep hearing that from Fed Chair Powell. We need to get rates up because we might need to cut them. Well, yeah, if you go to zero, it may have no effect. And particularly if the midterms flip the House or the Senate, or even worse, in terms of fiscal perspective, both, the Republicans are not going to come out and do fiscal stimulus. They say, look, you want it, but look what happened last time. And maybe not even the Democrats would do it this time. There's a risk to that because people don't like inflation. And so my concern is this could go on longer because the inventory builds are worse and they're going to keep getting worse. It just takes time to get through that.
Mm. And it's just worth reflecting also that, when the Fed moves rates, it takes time to percolate through. So in a way, they're probably not looking at what they've just done. It's what they did 2 or 3 months ago, right? It takes time for this to filter through. Actually, if you look at some of the research, it's 6 to 9 months. So they may not see the damage that they've done until it's way too late.
Yeah, you're right. And that is a big issue here is people say, look, the rate hikes aren't doing anything. That's because monetary policy works with long variable lags. Some of the research says it can be, I know you mentioned 6 to 9 months. Some of it says it can be 12 to 18 months. Yeah. So it's very likely that what will happen is that the global economy will just slow down and recess anyways from this big, fiscal boom. And then all of a sudden you're going to get these massive monetary lags that slam it. And even if they reverse, like you said, they could, throttle the engine in reverse, but it will not matter because one, they're going to go to zero and they've been there already. So twice. So that's not going to help. And on top of that, the lag of going back to zero, you can stack on the end of the lag you already are going through now. It's going to be real interesting. It's very possible we could have, a prolonged recession. And it makes sense when you start looking at the pieces. As you said, we're kind of monetary sleuths out here. We're just out looking around, picking up pieces and putting them on the board and trying to form this puzzle. And the more pieces that start popping up, you're like, that doesn't look too good. The picture that we're framing does not look good. Depression. It's just inevitable when you kind of yank around monetary policy and fiscal policy, trying to do the things that central bankers and policymakers are doing, that these are inevitable outcomes. The problem is that a lot of people that are chasing risk assets don't believe it can happen again. And that's always a mistake. But if all you have to do is pay attention to the yield curve, the euro dollar future curve, it's telling you what's coming. And it's telling you it's at least one way you can protect some of your money.
Absolutely. And it's worth underscoring, I think, specifically for those relatively newer investors, perhaps ones who've, only ever lived in an environment where rates have been cut and, markets have only ever gone up. We are in a whole new ball game now. And this ball game is going to be a game of multiple quarters, and we're only in the first quarter. So prepare for a long, slow crunch. And that means that there is really going to be a lot of people losing a lot of money through this.
Yeah, in particular, you look at, you know, consumption patterns. You have, you know, baby boomers, not just here in the U.S., but globally. There, you know, there is a point where they're going to head into retirement. I mean, they already are retiring. Your consumption falls. Now, imagine you cut your net worth in half because, you know, markets crash and housing market comes down. They will go back to the workforce, but they don't need to make as much as some, you know, young person, because they might have their government pension or their pension, their government assistance, their Social Security or whatever, you know, benefit from whatever country they're in. So they can work part time or in for a lower wage, but they're consumption is going to go down. If the consumption from the baby boomer generation overall from around the world stops or gets cut way back, because they're the biggest consuming generation we've ever had, if they change their spending habits, watch out. This inventory isn't going to move because the younger people don't consume at the same rate they do.
No, they can't, because they don't have as much in the way of assets to start with. And they've also got a different philosophy, which is quite interesting, just watching how that plays out. So very interesting time, Steve. And as always, really appreciate your whistle-stop tour around all the things you look at. And the net conclusion is the same as what I've been looking at, which is it's going to be an interesting ride.
Yeah, well, maybe in a couple months we should get back together, because I have a hunch that the next time it's going to be very obvious where things are headed for the global economy.
Well, terrific. Well, we'll certainly do that. And if people want to find out more about you, where do they go?
The easiest place to find me is on YouTube. You can just put my name, Stephen Van Meter, in the search bar, or you can follow me on Twitter at Meter Stephen, MeterStevEn. Martin, thanks for having me on your show. It's always a pleasure.
Really enjoyed speaking with you again. Take care. Talk again soon. Cheers.
You too, my friend.